And now we move on to step two.
All right. Chapter four, we agnostics. The first paragraph is very important because the first paragraph in We Agnostics kind of summarizes the first three chapters. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. Again, when we ask somebody to identify themselves as an alcoholic, it's a good idea for them to understand what we're talking about. What is the definition of alcoholism? Now, there was a problem years ago in Alcoholics Anonymous. We were involved incorporating something. I don't remember exactly what it was, but the lawyers had to get together and define what an alcoholic was. And they had a hard time defining it. An alcoholic is somebody that drinks a lot. Well, we're alcoholics and we don't drink anymore. You know what? So they went back and forth with, you know, what is an alcoholic? A problem drinker, you know, somebody that goes into blackouts. There was no real way they could agree on exactly what an alcoholic is. Well, the book Alcoholics Anonymous is very specific. They give a description, not a definition, but they give a description of the alcoholic. So the more characteristics you have in common with the descriptions in this book, the better chance you are of being alcoholic. And they sum it up here. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience can conquer. Now, here's a lot of times where we also get into trouble in AA. A spiritual experience. You know, when I walked into AA, I'm kind of glad they didn't walk up to me at the door and say, "Hi, Chris, we think you're an alcoholic. God is going to be the only one that can help you." I'm kind of glad they didn't put it that way when I first walked through the doors, because here's what I would have done. I would have said, "Okay, thank you for the information. I'm in the wrong place. That's not going to work for me," you know, because I thought if there was an interventionary God, if there was a God that cared anything about me, why was I living the kind of life I was living? Why was I crashing my car into block walls in front of the police station on Quaaludes and then asking them for directions? I mean, you know, if there is a God, he's like a cosmic Alan Funt. And he's going to pop out from behind the curtain at any minute and, you know, tell me the joke's on me, you know, because my life was just so bad. So in step two, I like what it says in the step book. It says the hoop that you need to jump through is larger than you think. There's a lot of really great things that it says about coming to believe in a power greater than ourselves that can restore us to sanity. Sanity being basically the inability to use self-will or rational thought to stay away from booze. You know, we're absolutely lunatic when we drink. As an alcoholic, you don't make a decision to order a drink and drink it, or buy a bottle and drink it, from a sane state of mind. Every one of you in here, if you be alcoholic, knows that drinking is really a bad idea for you, because you lose all control and you wake up in the morning with a summons from the police in your pocket for a DWI, or, you know, you've found that you've been thrown out of your house, or, I mean, anything can happen. So you know it's a bad idea. So any decision to drink, our ego likes us to think it's our decision. I decided to drink. Well, think about this. You can't make that decision. You can't make that decision based on a sane state of mind. It has to come from a place of insanity. It has to come from a place whereby you don't know the truth from the false. It has to. So for us to be restored to sanity, it doesn't mean that we're paranoid schizophrenics, you know, with multiple personality disorders. Some of us are, but not all of us. It means where alcohol is concerned, we don't act sanely or rationally. So we need to be restored to sane and rational thought. Jumping ahead very briefly to step 10 is where we've been restored to sanity. We think about alcohol safely and normally. You know, if we see alcohol near us, we'll react as if it's a hot flame. We will, you know, I wouldn't sit there with my hand over this candle. Well, that's the way we'll react with alcohol. We'll see it there, but we'll know that it will burn us. Now, when you're unrecovered, when you haven't had a spiritual experience, that's not how you can react. You can react like, ooh, isn't that nice? I think I'll have a toddy. Well, you've just gotten out of Happy Hills for the fourth time, you know, for alcoholic insanity, and you're going to have a toddy. Everybody else is looking at you like you're insane. The milkman knows that you're out of your mind, and you're like, what? What are you looking at me like that for? It's just a toddy. You're not sane and rational as it concerns alcohol. So we need to be restored to that if we want to have any chance of recovery. And we find that we can't get to that through human aid. Now, what's human aid? Human aid is the AA meetings. Human aid is your therapist or your psychiatrist. Human aid is your family. Human aid is you. All of those things are well and fine and can contribute to recovery, can contribute to sobriety, but they don't have enough power to be able to place you in a position to be safe and protected. That power has to come from a power greater than ourselves, greater than our own unaided will. It has to come from a power greater than ourselves. Many of us choose to call that power God. But there is one thing that you need to understand about Alcoholics Anonymous. We are not at all concerned about what kind of a God you believe in, the attributes that you place on your God, the religious belief systems or practices that you have. That's really your business and not ours. If somebody in AA starts coming up to you and telling you that you must believe in their specific God or else you aren't going to make it, then you're okay to have a problem with that individual. Because it's not Alcoholics' job to tell you what kind of a God to believe in. It is our job to tell you if you don't find a relationship with God, you are going to die. You're going to die an alcoholic death of one kind or another. That we will tell you, but we're not going to get involved in the attributes of God.
You know, as I'm sitting here listening to Chris, I feel like I'm listening to my first sponsor because we're going to start talking about God here. And I was strong atheist, aerospace engineer by education. Math makes a lot of sense to me. I was able to prove to you that there was not God mathematically. It was absolutely exhausting and amazing. And it states here, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And I'm glad Chris hit it right on the nose. We're not insane people, and don't believe you're insane. Oh, I got this alcoholic thinking. Everybody has that thinking, whether you're an alcoholic or a normie, as we call it. We're all humans, and we have some just crazy thoughts sometimes. And so it's not just limited to us, the alcoholic. And I don't like when we put ourselves down because we have unlimited power. We actually have more power, if you can believe this, than the normies because we have tapped into this sense of power through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like when I watch the normies go through pain, I feel for them. I have all you. I could go anywhere, and it's amazing when I move to a new town and I'm walking with a friend who has been there for 20 years, and I'm saying hi to everybody. They're like, "How do you know all these people?" Well, they're all AA people, you know. I get an instant 4,000 friends in any town I go to, so it's truly amazing. So when my sponsor brought me through this step, and he says, "If that be the case," because you just agreed that you are the real deal, the real alcoholic. If that be the case, and only a spiritual experience will conquer that, what do you think? And I said, well, we're going to have to change this wording a little bit for me because I don't believe in God. And he says, then you're hosed. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? He goes, you're going to die. I'm like, well, there's got to be an out. There's probably a lot of people like me. He says, yeah, and they're all drinking and dead. And so I thought to myself, well, I'm going to have to find this God. It's not good. It's not going to work for me. He says, but you're only on step two. He kept reminding me that step 12 said, having had a spiritual awakening as the singular results of these steps. He says, so relax. And we kept moving forward. Unlike those other traditional sponsors that said, just wait. And when you find God, and then we'll move on to step four. Well, that gives them about 3 years, right?
Which is bad.
Before they have to deal with me. Because I would have never found God. I mean, I'm walking through the woods looking for burning bushes. You know, where's this God?
Yeah.
Here, God. Here, God. I couldn't find God. You know? Because I had to work the steps. After the ninth step, which I'll tell you about my spiritual awakening, which was on an airplane, which was the most embarrassing moment of my life. You're going to love this one. But I found him. You know, it was 37,000 feet, but... you're never going to fly again, so just get ready for tonight. So that's how I got over that. The thing is, came to believe, and it's the sanity part. It's that sanity. I'm not insane. I found that out. I used to listen to all these meetings. Oh, you know, I'm an alcoholic thinker. What do you mean you're an alcoholic thinker? I don't get it. Well, I got these crazy thoughts. Well, so does my sister, and she's not an alcoholic, and so do my friends and my wife, and you know what I mean? So don't put yourself down. You have a lot of power. And the next thing it says here is lack of power. That was our dilemma. Remember yesterday we talked about a purpose. The main purpose of this book was to show you precisely, exactly how we have recovered. Let's look at the object. It says lack of power. That was our dilemma. To find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously, but where and how are we going to find this power? In the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, folks, whenever they ask you a question, they answer it in the next paragraph. This is the answer. Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problems. It doesn't say alcoholic problems. It will solve all your problems, right? So we have a purpose. The main purpose is to show you precisely exactly how we have recovered. The main object, because the only way to get there is through a spiritual experience. So the main object of this book is to help you find that spiritual experience. So why are we not screaming this from the hilltops? It has the answers. It has the solution. And it's just because... It's not that AA people are mean. It's just that they haven't been shown. They only know this oral tradition, this speaking. And you know how oral stuff comes. It just gets watered down and watered down and watered down to finally you're at the point where you say, don't drink, go to meetings. And you're relapsing. And the guy goes, welcome back. We love you anyway. We'll love you till you love yourself.
You're the most important person in the room.
Yeah. Let's talk about selfishness. I'm the most important person in this room. Work a selfish program.
As long as I keep drinking, I'll be the most important person here.
Yeah, and then we throw parties for you. I mean, anyway, I'm not going to get into that. I'll go on, and I'm going to go off on that one. Continue.
I love analogies because they're easy to remember, and sometimes we can make them our own. And I've heard this. I heard this one, and it's truly great. Let's say you're new in Copenhagen. You've just moved here from Iceland or somebody. A lot of you guys out there from Iceland. You just moved here, and you got a car that's not running right. It's running really terrible. Now, right down the street is a mechanic, a car mechanic, who can help you fix it, maybe. You don't know because you have no experience, but you believe that he's a mechanic, so he could probably fix your car. But you don't have any experience. You don't know whether he's a good one or a bad one. But you don't have a better option, so you take your car down to this mechanic. And the mechanic not only fixes the problem, but when you get it back, it's tuned up, it's never run better. Everything's aligned, it feels like a new car. Now you have experience with that particular mechanic. And the next time you need car work, you're going to have faith in that mechanic. Okay, so belief is maybe, faith is I've got experience and I'm sure. All right? Now, we are only asking you for belief in step two, to believe that there's a power greater than yourself that can restore you to sanity, because The faith usually comes after you've given this a chance, after you've given it a shot. Once you start to do some of these spiritual exercises, once you start to gain experience with the practices in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, you're gonna jump from, what does it say, the bridge of reason to the shore of faith. Mm-hmm. You're gonna go from belief to faith. Now, we're just asking you to believe. And another analogy that we're basically is a good one for this is I learned this from one of my favorite speakers over in the States talks about this. Let's say that you work in a parachute factory making parachutes, and this is the craziest cast of characters on the assembly line you've ever seen. Not a one of them is doing their job right. They're not packing it right. It's the wrong material. You know, the rip cords don't look like they'll ever, you know, be able to take a tug. I mean, this whole package is just bad. And these things are going out to the public off the assembly line. There's not a chance these things are going to work. Okay, you're on vacation. You take a vacation down in Bermuda or whatever. And you're flying in a plane, and all of a sudden the pilot goes, oh my God, the engine's conking out. We're going to crash. Put on a parachute quick. We're going to have to jump. It's our only chance. And you reach underneath the seat, and you pull out one of your parachutes. You're like, oh no, out of all the parachutes I could have, here's one that I made. And this is never going to work. So you put the thing on, and you jump out of the plane. Now, on the way down, are you going to be so sure that it's not going to work that you're not going to try pulling the ripcord? You're going to pull the ripcord, right? You got nothing to lose. You're going down. Now, this is kind of what we're asking you in AA. You're going down. You know, on your own unaided will, are you going down or are you going down? Every day it gets worse out there. So what we're doing in basically... in step two is we're asking you to just believe that it might be a good idea to pull the ripcord. What have you got to lose? So let's consider some of these possibilities as far as a power greater than ourselves is concerned. Are we so sure that God is not going to intervene in our lives that we're just going to forget it all and go die, or are we going to quite possibly decide to pull the ripcord because we want to live? That's the place that a lot of us get to. A lot of us just start to come to believe that, well, maybe this AA stuff will work. Maybe this God idea might offer some hope.
So for you atheists out there, I was sitting in my home in Florida, and my sponsor said to me, came to believe a power greater than yourself could restore you to sanity. And I said to him, he read that little paragraph, and I said, I can't do this. He said, all right. He says, can you do this? Can you believe that for the last 90 days that the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous has restored you to sanity? You haven't drank. You haven't beaten anybody. You haven't harmed yourself. You haven't harmed others. And I thought to him, and I said, yeah. I said, I could do that. I could do that. And he just kept pushing me forward because he knew in his heart of hearts that when I truly did the steps as outlined in this book, I would have a spiritual awakening, the obsession of alcohol would go away, and I would live a beautiful life, which has happened to me. And so it says here on page 46 in the last paragraph, much to our relief, we discover we did not need to consider another's conception of God. And this is why we need to find people that know this book. Because as he's walking me through this book, he read that to me. I'm like, so I'm not the only one that thinks like this? You know, I thought I was tainted. I thought I was the only one who thought like this. But I'm not the only one who thinks like this. So he says, our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make an approach to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe, underlying the totality of things, we began to possess of a new sense of power. So I'm not powerless. I'm getting more power, as it says here. All I have to do is just believe. So it says here, I'm getting a new sense of power and direction, provided, and they always have conditions in the big book, provided we took other simple steps meaning working the rest of the steps of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then it comes here and it asks us this question, and this is step two. Step two is on page 47, second paragraph. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? And I stop. And I look at the sponsee, and I say that. And my sponsor asked me this, and I said, I do not believe, and I'm not willing to believe. And he says, okay. He says, then you're dead. And he closes the book. And I was like, will you stop this dead thing? And he looked at me and goes, well, why move any further? I said, because you told me in step 12 that I was going to get this, so let's move forward. And he looked and he goes, oh, so you have been listening. And he says, that's when he came up with, well, will you believe that the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous have kept you to sanity? I said, yes. He says, okay, so in your own warped way of thinking, you believe that right now the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous will help you continue with the rest of the steps so that you can get a spiritual awakening, which will relieve the obsession of alcoholism and give you a life that you cannot believe that you'll ever have. And I said, okay, we could do that. So it says here, as soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, as I did, it says, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. And that is a true statement to me. And that's what happened to me. It says, many of us have been so touchy about casual reference to spiritual things, made us bristle with antagonism. This sort of thinking had to be abandoned. So he says, get over it. He says, get over it. He says, keep an open mind, believe that I believe, and believe that by working these steps, you will receive the obsession of the mind, it will be relieved, you will no longer drink again, and you will help others achieve to be all they could be. It says, we who have traveled this dubious path beg. How many alcoholics do you know beg? We don't beg much, do we? They're begging. Beg you to lay aside prejudice against organized religion. That was very hard for me to do. I will read the second step promises here in a minute, right after Chris is done.
Why don't we keep it this simple? Everyone in here who either believes that there's a power greater than themselves that can restore them to sanity, or is willing to believe that there's a power greater than themselves that can restore them to sanity, just raise your hand. Okay. That's practically everybody in here. That's pretty good. Let's hear the promises, though.
Okay. So these are the promises. It says, and I love this, here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed. They flatly declare. They all agree. I'll take a survey. Us three, let's figure out where we're going to go for lunch today and not get in an argument and try to figure this out in 5 minutes. Three of us couldn't figure out we'd probably go to that pork place again. God, that was great yesterday.
How about sushi?
We could do sushi. See, but I like Italian. So here we go. Okay? It starts. But here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed, they flatly declare that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, which is step two, to take a certain attitude towards that power, which is step three, and to do certain simple things, which is steps 4 through 12, there has been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of total failure of their human resources, they found that a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. This happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. And the few simple requirements are the 12 steps. And this is the proof. When many hundreds of people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact of their lives, they present a powerful reason why one should have faith. And that's it for me. I think we got a break coming up here. Yeah, that's it.
Okay, we're going to take a 10-minute break. Yeah. You want to take us out, Eric?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Eric. I'm an alcoholic.
All right.
Not sure if this works, does it?
You're on.
Okay. Let's see. Yeah, 10-minute break, and we're coming back sharp at 11. Just to let you know, we now have fresh sandwiches in the snack bar, and there's a sign-up sheet by the bookstore for Doug's 12-step worksheets, and that's it. see you in 10 minutes. Okay. Thanks.
So that worked out good, huh?
That's it.
That worked out good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody back? I think, is the tape rolling? Tape rolling? My name is in Denmark on this chilly morning, being from Florida. It's just downright cold to me. But it's absolutely beautiful, beautiful country you all have here. As we move on through step two, just to recap step two, on the worksheets that you all have been sending your email out to, I wrote up a step two worksheet, and I did this with my sponsor, who's a historian from Sarasota, Florida, Doug Kay. And what we did here is we went through We the Agnostics. We wrote down the page number and the paragraph, and we divided it into three categories. What the problem is of being an atheist. It's tough living life like that. The action is the second column that you need to take to get to the third column, which is called the solution. And the solution is, of course, finding a God, finding a power of your understanding, and of which I found that power by working the steps. Now, what happens is you're going to hear some sponsors out there saying, you know, tell me when you get the third step. Well, I don't know how to get the third step, but if I was to be left in that second, third step column, I would have been dead because I would have relapsed. There's no doubt in my mind I would have relapsed. But by having a sponsor who knew the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, as Chris and I are teaching you today, this weekend, he was able to send me through the steps eloquently, quickly, to find a power greater than myself, which relieved the obsession of alcoholism, which means I no longer put alcohol in my body or drugs or any other kind of mood-altering drugs. And I no longer have that obsession, okay? And he knew that I needed to move through these steps at a pretty darn quick rate. I was talking to somebody outside, and they asked me about the speed at which I take people through the steps. That's always a question. Are you missing something? The only thing I want to do in the first round of when I meet with a sponsee is give them this solution. I give them a solution in 4 hours. I literally write their fourth step for them. I write it. I don't want to know the little things like my father slapped me when I was four. Whatever. I want to know the big, meaty stuff. As we call it in America, the thing. The thing. The thing that we're not going to tell anybody. The thing that we're going to take to the grave. That is what I'm trying to get out in the four step. And then I show them how to do daily inventory. And I even have a sheet. Okay? With that daily inventory, you will then learn how to clean up your life. And I give you a daily solution. I don't give it to you. The big book gives it to you. I just kind of put it into forms to make it easier for everybody. Because not being very bright, I got very confused with this book. So over the years, I put it into this form. Okay? So just to reiterate, we have the second step worksheet. It shows you in the first column what the problem is. The second column is the action that you need to take to get to the third column, which is the solution, which is God. Okay? Now we're going to start talking about the third step.
All right. There's some information that's necessary, I believe, for us to look at as a prelude to taking step three. I think the more convinced we are that we need God's help in our life, the better chance we're going to really actively seek God and start living a spiritual life. Make no mistake about it, if you're alcoholic, alcoholism is your problem and spiritual living is your solution. I do not believe not drinking and going to meetings is a treatment for alcoholism. I believe that not drinking and go to meetings will create a sober atmosphere for you depending on how alcoholic you are, for a finite period of time. Each of us has a grace period whereby we separate from alcohol. We'll have a grace period until we start to live a spiritual life before we drink again. And each of our grace periods is different. Some of them can be 15 years. Some of them can be 15 days or even less. It'll depend on how alcoholic you are. In this book, it talks about the scale of alcoholism. It talks about your particular lack of control over drink. So you can be more alcoholic than somebody else. The saddest thing I see in Alcoholics Anonymous today is sober alcoholics in the meetings giving somebody who's relapsing a hard time by saying, you just don't want it bad enough. You're just not being honest with us. You want to drink more than you want to stay sober. You know, people that say that are saying that out of a lack of understanding of alcoholism. They just are. If we're powerless over alcohol, we can have any kind of desire we want to not drink. If we're powerless, we're drinking. So a lot of times someone who is has still maybe some power over choice in drink is looking at someone who has a complete lack of power of choice in drink and judging them as somebody who is not willing. And we see that a lot in AA in our area. And it's sad. It's sad. And usually the people who are the real alcoholics end up in our group or working with us, right, Doug? Because people say, we don't know what to do with this guy. Go see Doug.
Yeah.
And that's usually what happens. But to get back to the information I want to go over here, is the last person that took me through the steps asked me to do this. Now, you won't find the instructions for this specifically in this chapter, but it's a good exercise to do. In the big book on page 60, it goes down the ABCs, okay? A, that we were alcoholic, could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved us of our alcoholism. And C, God, that could and would if he were sought. Being convinced we were at step 3, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? Now, from this paragraph here where it says the first requirement, all the way over to the next page, 62 at the bottom, this is the how and why of it. This is a really good description of an untreated alcoholic and how they think and how they act. And it's a good idea to translate this into a look at yourself. How we would do that is this. Chris is almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though Chris's motives are good. Chris tries to live by self-propulsion. Chris is like an actor who wants to run the whole show and is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players his own way. So in other words, turn this description of the alcoholic into a personal statement about myself and see if it fits, see if it's true. Chris is like the actor who tries to run the whole show. Let's look at that for a minute. Picture that there's a play going on up here. And I'm an actor. Chris is an actor. And there's a director, and there's a script, and there's everyone plays their own part. But all of a sudden, Chris, the actor, wants to change everything because nobody's doing it right. You know, no. You should be doing this. You should be doing this. And all of a sudden, I try to take over the direction of this play. All of a sudden, all hell is going to break loose, right? Everything's going to be confusion. Isn't that the way we live our lives? You know, I always had instructions for the wife. This is the way you should do all this. And, you know, my kids, well, you should be doing this. And my boss, no, you shouldn't be running the company that way. You should be running it this way. I had instructions and directions for everybody about everything. I was like the actor trying to run the whole show. And you know what? It wasn't working. You know, my wife would say, you know, Art, you're trying to tell me what to do. I had to lift your head up and turn you over so you didn't drown in your own vomit last night. And you want to tell me how to live. You know what I mean? And my boss, I'd tell my boss, well, if you'd ever show up for work, I might consider some of your suggestions in how I should run my company. But you just blew up a house and missed 3 days of work. I don't think I'm going to be considering your suggestions. I mean, we're the worst people in the world. You know, or we'll give relationship advice, you know? Well, what you should do, I mean, you know, what kind of relationships do we have when we're out there drinking? It's tragic, isn't it? My God, it's tragic. I mean, the last girlfriend I had when I was drinking was a biker old lady. And she used to carry a gun around with her and want to kill people. And me included, she'd been an active drug addict for 20-some years. So I'm going to get sober and 5 days later give somebody advice on how to have a relationship. Well, what I'd do, Chris, if I wanted your advice, I'd go over to your mom's house where you're living, you know, and knock on the door and ask you. But I'm not real interested. So this would really upset me because I've got a better idea for all of you. And you know what? If all of you would just do it the way I think you should do it, we'd all be more happy. This is what it says in this book. And it also says that we'll do it through being nice, like we'll bring you flowers to try to make you do what we want you to do, or we'll do it with threats. I'll kill you if you don't do it. And all this is really unfortunate for the people that were around because they're like, this guy's crazy. Or, you know, who did I marry? Or we got to fire this guy. Or they want to distance themselves. So we're wondering why our life is a failure. We're wondering why we're not achieving our lofty ambitions. And this is a great couple of pages because when I first read this in rehab, you know what I thought? Wow, this is Harry. I didn't think it was me. I couldn't, you know, this is my roommate, you know, the guy who's driving me crazy because he's not doing what I say. We have to personalize this stuff. Now, here are some of the requirements, really, for the third step. And everybody thinks that saying the third step prayer is taking the third step. The third step prayer is an affirmation of a decision that we've already made. By the time we get to the third step prayer and say the third step prayer, we have to be convinced of a couple of things. Now, on the bottom of page 62, this is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Now, that really means telling everybody around us what they need to do and how they should act and how they should live. One of the best things I ever heard in my life was there was this great guy, Chuck C. from California, and he was huge in the 60s and 70s. He was probably the most in-demand speaker on the West Coast. And he talked about having a talk with his family after he got sober. And this is what he said to them. I'm trying to live a spiritual life now, and I'm never, ever again going to ask you to do anything. I never, ever again will ask any of you to do anything or be anything. I'm never going to ask any of that ever again. There's only one thing I'm going to ask you, and that is if there's anything I can ever do for you, please tell me what that is. It's the only thing I'm ever going to ask of you again. And that was a beautiful, beautiful example of the shift in perception that I'm not saying any of us are ever, especially myself, are going to achieve that level of release from our ego. But imagine being that free, that we can just let everything go like that and not be involved in all the minutiae of our family and everybody else's life. Here are the three aspects that the three relationship directives that they really want us to become aware of with God. Now, these are so broad that any religion that you're involved with, any spirituality you're involved with, this should not go in conflict with it. All right, these are just relationship directives as far as your relationship with a power greater than yourself. God is going to be our director. God is going to be our principal, and God is to be looked on as our Father. Now, we should consider these things. We should become comfortable with them. Before we take the third step, affirmation prayer, we should be all right with these. Now, it's as simple as this. What's a father? A father usually helps to give life to an individual, tries to create an environment where you're protected and safe and cared for. I think that's what God does for me. What is a principal? A principal, think about being an insurance salesman or someone. You're an agent, and the principal is the home office. And as long as you as an agent follow certain rules and guidelines when selling the insurance, the home office is going to back you up, and it's going to put its weight and authority behind the policies that you write. And the people that you write these policies for will be protected. So as long as you're following the rules, the home office is going to protect you. As long as we're living a spiritual life, we're going to have a sense of power come into our life from God. So God's the principal and we're the agent. And God is the director and we're directed. We're to be directed. So through prayer and meditation, we're to learn to develop the intuitive part of our minds so that we can get direction from God, from our higher, so God can direct us. And we learn how to do that through practice with meditation. It was a wonderful meditation here this morning. For anybody that missed it, it was spectacular, and it was a guided meditation. And the guidance that led into the meditation were how can we help the still sick and suffering alcoholic? And when we think about things like that, we're going to get the guidance from God to do that, and we're going to get the power from God to do that and go help the next alcoholic. So these are basically some of the attributes there is. I also believe that we're kind of being directed to take the rest of the steps too.
Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood it. So now we're back on the couch in my house, and my sponsor comes in and he gets to his knees. And I said, this is going to stop. You're embarrassing me. Get up, sit on the couch, and start.
Somebody might see.
Someone might see this, right? Falling off the bar stool and peeing on myself is fine in public. Getting on your knees is out of control embarrassment.
Parking on the neighbor's lawn.
As I think about that now, that's crazy. That's insanity, right? So he wants to do the third step. And the way they used to do it at Dr. Bob's house is they'd bring you up to his room, and they'd put you on your knees, and you would say the third step prayer. And if they didn't believe you, you just stay there and keep saying it until they believed you.
That's so, not good enough. Right, do it again. Right,
like the Marines in the United States. Do it!
And turn it over. No!
So he said to me, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Are you willing to turn your life and your will over to the care of God? And I said, no. And he said, then you're going to die. And he closed the book again. So here he is closing the book again. He's doing this dying thing. And I'm doing all this work he wants to go through. And I said, all right, well, give me another analogy. Because I knew he had one stuck away somewhere. And he says, will you, this changed my life. Will you make a decision to finish the rest of the steps? And that to that question, I said, yes. I won't get to my knees. You can do whatever prayer you want. But I will do that. And so then we moved on. It was funny because Pally and the gentleman who's working the mic and everything, It says here that each person is like the actor who wants to run the whole show. So Chris is back there in his meditative state, ready to get on stage here. And actually, he was sleeping because he was jet lagged. And
they were pretending I was meditating.
You're right. And then these two gentlemen over here are setting up the table, and I'm like, I got this one. And I go walk up. I'm like, the mic should be here. This should be down here. And I'm moving everything around. He's back there laughing. I'm thinking to myself, oh, my God, am I not just running this whole show or what? But I was being very kind. Well, maybe you would want to move this, you know. I was
spiritual really, control. Yeah,
as I'm saying, maybe you might want to move. I'm just moving it. You know, moving this over here. I'm taking this gentleman's wires, and I'm like, move this. some are sicker than others. So anyway, in the beginning on how it works, this is great. Rarely, what's the word rarely mean? Like sometimes, right? Sometimes. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. So that means they're saying, rarely did they see somebody go out and get drunk who has thoroughly followed the path. So when my sponsor read that, being the self-proclaimed rocket scientist that I think I am, I said to myself, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed the path. Aha! What's the path? Right? So if you know the path and you thoroughly follow it, rarely will you get drunk. Does that make sense? I kind of took it backwards and moved it right in. And he says, very good question. So let's find out what the path is. And he told me the path was the big book, this, and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he showed me something like this. He made a circle and a triangle, of which I thought was just always very beautiful, hanging from people's neck. I thought it was like a little jewelry thing. I didn't know it actually had meaning to it. So he showed me this path. And he said, did you know that Bill Wilson, being the great marketing person he was from Wall Street, didn't make this up? This came like, you know, 4,000 BC. And what it really meant was mind, body, and soul. If your mind, body, and soul are in connection with each other, you'll be in the center of the triangle, safe and protected by the universe, i.e. God. All right? But what we did is we had to add something to it, and then we trademarked it. And in America, that means no one else could use it. And so we took this 4,000-year-old spiritual thing and legally trademarked it. Now, if
you... That was a mistake.
That wasn't me. If you look in my book... Oh, I don't have it. But if you look at some of the third edition books, you'll see the circle and triangle in there. All right, but we had to take it out because there was somebody that was putting it on pillowcases and blankets. So we had two choices: sue them, which we have no outside issues and traditions, right? Or let it go. So we let it go. That's how come you don't see it in books. But what they have here is it says recovery, and Chris talked about this the other day, yesterday. It says recovery, unity, and service. Okay, so he showed me how this worked. He just didn't walk up and say, you know, I work the steps every day in my life. I used to grab those people and be like, how do you do it? Well, you know, I just don't think. Well, here we go with the analogies. You know, and I just let go. Oh, there's another one. Let go and let God.
How do you let go? You hang on.
I heard that one. And then all of a sudden the guy would be like, he'd just leave and I'd be like, what did he just say? You know, it was another person who didn't know the big book. But my sponsor said, I said, how do you work the steps daily in your life? He says, do you see this recovery part of the triangle? That means the 12 steps. How do you work the 12 steps daily in your life? Well, he went to page 85 and 86, and there's 12 questions when you retire at night. And you answer those questions. And I have it in a form here, so you don't have to keep writing it like I did. All right? If you got a resentment, you make amends. You make amends, that's the 9th step. You got a resentment, that's the 4th step. You tell someone immediately, that's the 5th step. It goes through the whole thing. That's how I do it. The next thing is unity. He says, I would advise you to make a minimum of 3 meetings a week. Well, now I make 2 meetings a week, but I sponsor people on Saturday. I bring them through the steps, so that's my 3rd. Okay? The service work is I belong to a home group in the United States. So by doing these 3 things, I'm in the center and I'm safe and protected. That is an explanation on how to stay sober. Totally makes sense to me. So that is the path that I've been following. And in 13 years, I have not found a reason to drink. Okay? So rarely have I seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed the big book, this path, right here that I'm showing you today. Okay. The next thing is, remember we talked about beg? It says here in the third paragraph on page 58, it says, we beg of you to be fearless, thorough from the very start. So people are like, okay. So you're telling me you're taking people through the steps in 4 hours. So where's the thoroughness? The thoroughness is not the first meeting of the steps. What I'm doing is I'm showing you the procedures, the mechanics on how to find a God. I'm giving you a solution, a daily solution on how to live your life. As you do your daily inventory and meet with your sponsor on a weekly basis, all this other stuff will come up. So it's not a one-time shot, folks. What I'm doing is the thoroughness comes in the continued to take personal inventory, not in the original one. See, people get held up. I've been working on my four step for 6 months. Really? Because now wonder no one wants to do a four step. I mean, would you want to spend 6 months? I have ADD. I can't even keep a thought for 2 nanoseconds. How am I going to write a 6 month inventory? I'm thinking of something else. Like I just thought of something else just right now as I'm talking to you. Do you see what I mean? So I write the inventory for my sponsees. Because I don't let that little stuff in there. I just want the big meaty stuff. The little stuff will come out on the daily inventory. So it says, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. If you go on to the being convinced, here it is. On page 62, this blew me away because all I used to hear is, this is a selfish program. This is a selfish program. I got to do this because this is a I understand what these people are saying. I really do. They're killing more people than smallpox by saying this because you have little idiots like me going, yeah, I'm selfish. Sign me up for this program. And then all of a sudden I read page 62 and it says selfishness, self-centeredness. That we think is the root of our troubles. I'm like, I thought it was alcoholism. He says, dude, alcoholism is the first step. Admitted you're powerless over alcohol. Get over it. Now let's move on to life. Right? Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our problem. And then it says, above everything. Well, I don't know what that means to you, but above everything means to me, above all, above everything. It says, we alcoholics must be rid of selfishness. We must or it kills us. God makes that possible. So then I say to my sponsor, but I'm having a problem with that God thing. He says, well, then you're hosed and you're going to die. He kept bringing that up, right? And he was right. He says, but the 12th step states, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, so relax. You're only on three. And I was able to do that. The third step promises are this. I love these promises. It says here on page 63, when we sincerely took such a position, and the position they're talking about is what Chris was just saying, that God is the director, the principal, and the father. So when we sincerely took such a position about that God, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer being all powerful. How could I be powerless over people, places, and things if I'm all powerful? I used to do, I guess I had about a year sobriety, I was doing affirmations. I hated myself. I really did. I was just, I always say I'm a recovered scumbag because I was so bad. I really was. So I started doing affirmations and it was crazy and it felt very uncomfortable. But I really started falling in love with myself. I went to a holiday at my family's house. Now, my family's house in New Jersey, we all used to just kind of, they like to say kid each other, but it was really mean. It was really mean. And I hadn't seen him in a while. And I was sitting in the kitchen, and my sister said something to me. And I felt like someone put a knife in my back. And I was like, whoa, that's not going to work here. Everybody come in, we're having a family meeting. And I got my mother in there and my sisters. I said, if any of you talk to me like that again, you will see my children, but you will never see me again. And they're like, oh, lighten up. I was like, shut up. This is the way it works. I love myself. I will never treat you like I used to treat you again, ever. And you know, in 13 years, we adore each other. They've never done it again. So I'm not powerless over people, places, and things. I didn't, no offense, I didn't like New Jersey. I got up and I left and I moved to Florida, right? But what about your family? Well, they'll be okay. I just moved. I didn't like it. So I'm not powerless over that stuff. And it says right here that now I have a God, a being all powerful. He provided what we needed. If we kept close to him and performed his work well, established on such a footing, we are less interested in ourselves. our little plans and designs. More and more we become interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. Here we go again. As we felt new power flow in. So now I even have more power flowing in. As we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose the fear of the today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. And that is my experience by working these steps. It says, now we're at step three. So, I don't know about you, Chris, but if, do you all know the third step prayer here? Do many of you? If you would all just take a minute, and I would like to say the third step prayer with everybody. It's as many of us have said to our makers as we understood him. Third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those with thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. When I read that for the first time, coming from a selfish point of view, it says, relieve me of the bondage of self. So I thought I was asking for myself. I was like, yeah, you know, relieve me of this bondage. But if you read on, it says, relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties. So coming back to the selfishness that I used to have, take away my difficulties, take away all these problems, take away this. I was going through a divorce. I was losing my kids. In my first year of sobriety, I lost everything. From all the damage, it's like driving 100 miles an hour, throwing the beer cans in the back, and then all of a sudden you hit the brakes, and all these beer cans are coming forward. And you're just taking them one at a time and discarding. I literally, my 1 year sobriety date, I was in my car in the snow in Charlottesville, Virginia. I had no place to live. I lost it all. But you know, I didn't drink. And I went to a meeting, and I helped another. That's the big thing, to help me. So it says, take away my difficulties. But then it states this, we want to take away the difficulties that victory over them will show you all how I don't have to drink. So it says, take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. It's always talking about helping others. Don't take away my difficulties for me. I was just speaking with a gentleman who was married for many, many years and lost his wife and hasn't drinking. He's many years sobriety. And he just can't believe the power that AA has given him to make it through this terrible loss. That's huge. How could I say I'm powerless? Folks, you have more power than you can imagine. You really do. I do. I have designed everything that has happened in my life, good and bad, to this date. It says here, voicing it without reservation, this was only a beginning. The third step's only a beginning. Okay? How many people have heard this? 1, 2, 3, drink. 1, 2, 3, drink. We call it the third step drink. 1, 2, 3, drink. You know, and that's it. You stop. You have the third step, and you don't do any more work. They say there's no time frames in AA. That's a lie. Let's look at this. The last paragraph, it says, next we launched. Next, we launched. I talked to my roommate from college. I went to an aerospace college, and he went into the military to fly fighter planes for the U.S. military. And I said, what is it like to be launched off a ship? You know? And he's like, you're 0 to 80 within like 50 feet or 100 feet. It's totally amazing. So if you don't think launched is fast, let's read this again. It says, next we launch on a course of vigorous action. The first step is which is a personal house cleaning. The personal house cleaning is the fourth step, right? Which many of us have never attempted. No kidding. You think I wanted to look at myself when I'm drinking? Heck, I didn't even want to look at you. It says here, though our decision, meaning though our decision to do the third step was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent, here we go with that word permanent again, permanent effect unless, here's a time frame, at once. How fast is at once? Pretty fast. At once, followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. I love this one. Our liquor was but a symptom. Our liquor is 1/12 of the problem. Admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Get over it, move on. 1/12 of the problem. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to the causes and condition. Therefore, we started upon a personal house cleaning, which is step 4, which Chris will start taking us through.
Have you ever heard anybody say to you, "What's your problem?" I mean, how many times, right? Now, we never really knew how to answer that. You know, how exactly do you answer that? Well, we've got a problem with alcoholism. There's a line in the book, 12 and 12, that states, defective relationships are almost always the cause of our immediate woes, including our alcoholism. Let's look at that sentence. That's a powerful sentence. Let's look at that for a minute. Defective relationships are almost always the cause of our problems. So we've got defective relationships. A lot of times we usually don't think so, though. We think it's other people. We think it's the other people that have the problem. You know, why is everybody picking on me? You know, we're people who, because we think we have good motives, we don't understand why people are mad at us when our actions are not the best. We can be amazing people. The alcoholic can be charming and resourceful interesting and engaging, and we can attract a lot of codependent people because of all these characteristics until they realize what they've brought home. You know, they've got Damien, you know, instead of whoever they thought. So defective relationships are really, really a problem for us, even if we don't think so. I know that when I first came into AA, I hated 90% of the people in the rooms. I just did. I'd wait until the meeting was over, and then I'd grab my buddy, and I'd be outside and go, "Hey, did you hear what so-and-so said? That hypocrite, I can't believe it. And if she raises her hand one more time in a meeting and shares about her cat, I'm going to want to kill myself." You know, and I'd go on a tirade for about a half an hour. This is like after every meeting, you know, with these, the issues that I have with people. And, you know, that really was a beautiful picture of the face of my alcoholism. The face of my alcoholism is in my defective relationships with other people. Now, the most amazing thing I think about the book Alcoholics Anonymous and about how it was written was that Bill Wilson in the first 70 or so, how they put this book together, because it's amazing that the person with the longest amount of sobriety was Bill, and he had 3.5 years. I sponsor a lot of people, and I don't even want the people with 3.5 years alone in my house, unescorted, you know, or borrowing my car, let alone writing this book, which is still completely unequaled in the addictive illness field as far as a recovery process that achieves results. But what Bill did is Bill was a failed businessman. You know, like when Jesus wanted to teach and he was around fishermen, he would use fish in his analogies. And when he was around shepherds and sheep, you know, people that had flocks of animals, you know, he would talk about sheep. And what Bill is about to start to talk to us specifically about how we have defective relationships with people, institutions, and principles. He's a failed businessman. He's gonna start by explaining how a business inventory works. And if you have a business, and let's say you're selling shoes, and 25% of the shoes sell all the time, and 75% never sell. They're just, nobody's ever buying them. Wouldn't it be beneficial to you to get rid of that 75% of the inventory that's not working, so that there's room in the store for more of the stuff that's working? That's kind of what he's asking us to do in the resentment inventory. Let's get rid of our stock in trade. Let's get rid of what doesn't work as far as our relationships with other people. And the first thing we need to do is we need to identify what the problem is. We need to identify what the problem is with our difficulties with other people. So column number one is, who are you resentful at? Okay, column number two, who or what are you resentful at? Column number two is, why are you resentful? You know, I'm resentful at Joe. Well, why are you resentful at Joe? Because he treats me like crap. Okay, well, can you be more specific? Because when I'm taking somebody through this inventory, I don't like generalizations like that because, you know, or, like he's never there. Or he always does this. Those are generalizations that I like people to get away with. You know, so it'll get down to, why don't I like Joe? He said something bad to me last Thursday. You know, he insulted me last Thursday. You know, whatever. You need to get down to the specific reason why you're upset. Then there's the seven areas of self. We cannot be resentful at someone unless, I'll keep it this simple, money, power, and sex. Okay, those are the things that get us up in the morning and move us around during the day. Okay, money, power, sex. Those are our main motivators. So when they are harmed, threatened, or interfered with, even if it's only fancied, when they're harmed, threatened, or interfered with, this is going to create a resentment in us. Now, most of the time, this is a misperception. I don't believe that the universe is a hostile place. I don't believe that the environment is a hostile place. I believe that environment that God created can be one that we can find a lot of harmony in. Even when there's crazy things going on, we can find a lot of harmony in it. But I need to look at these instincts and ambitions that are being harmed, threatened, or interfered with, and I need to look at them fairly closely. Because a lot of times when I'm examining these, I'll see that, you know, this isn't really even true. That this resentment that I've got going on in my head isn't even real. It's a misperception that I have. And that'll come out a lot of times when I'm in column number three. Then there's a line of demarcation after column three. And we need to shift our perspective and look at ourselves. We got to swing the light off of them and put the light on ourselves and ask ourselves, where had we been at fault? Now, this can be difficult for a lot of us. A lot of us can't see very clearly where we've been at fault. It doesn't go. It's something that goes against our ego. It goes against our sense of self. So we need to look very, very carefully at column number four. Where had we been at fault? Where had we been selfish? Where had we been dishonest? Where had we been self-seeking? Where had we been afraid? Where had we acted out of fear? Now, when we're looking at all this, we're trying to find the truth in what's real in our relationship with this person, place, or institution. It's very, very, very important to get to the truth in things. Every single spiritual teacher that is out there, every single person who religions are based on, Muhammad, Jesus, Moses, any of these people, even the modern day mystics and spiritual people like Thich Nhat Hanh or Anthony DeMille, they all ask you to do one thing. You know what they ask you to do? Wake up! Okay? You're asleep, thinking you're awake. Wake up and see the truth about things. See the truth about things because your perspective is wrong. Your perspective is wrong. And as an alcoholic, you can't have a wronger perspective. You can't be seeing things more untrue than you see them as an unrecovered alcoholic. So what Bill is asking you to do in the step four and step four is to wake up and really look at what's going on. What's the truth? What's the truth with these resentments?
On step four, it says, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. So what I'd like to do is just go over the resentment real quick. Now, I have in the worksheet, put it on paper, okay? And I have the columns for you. I have everything. I've done everything but wrote your fourth step for you. So this is pretty simple. Now, when I did my first four step, I had 22 pages of resentment. I had nothing in the four-step column because everybody harmed me. I harmed nobody. So my sponsor looked at that. He goes, where were you to blame? Never? Nope. I could have taken a lie detector test and passed it. Nope. Yeah. 22 pages of these things. Is that crazy? It says here, resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. Let me ask you this question. When you have a resentment, are you thinking about God? Or are you just running those tapes? I'm going to get back. I'm going to get... All this time is just wasted and wasted and wasted. Resentment is the number one offender. It says, from it stems forms of spiritual disease. For we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. So that's a threefold disease. Mental, physical, and spiritual. Okay? Threefold disease. So what did the founding fathers and one daughter, lady, what did they do? They came up with a set of steps. And these steps will represent each one of the three mental, spiritual, and physical disease that they're talking about here. Steps one through three are the spiritual. I believe if I was able to arrange this show, I would have put that at the bottom because I couldn't get over the spiritual. And I think a lot of people are going out and relapsing on this because they have these sponsors out there that are saying, well, until you find that, we can't move forward. That is furthest from the truth. Because step 12 states that having had a spiritual awakening as the result. So you got to get to 12. Just keep moving on. Keep moving on. You see what I'm saying? So steps 1 through 3 are the spiritual. Steps 4 through 7 are the mental. Because you're really putting a lot of stuff on this paper that hurts. And it hurts deep. And I was exhausted when I did it. Because you're looking at a lot of stuff we don't like. Okay, steps 8 and 9 are the physical. Now I'm going out and making the physical amends to you all. I'm making that physical amends. And I'm doing it to completion. I'm doing it to completion. You could ask me any situation on what to do in a 9-step form, and I will give you on how to do it. A lot. I couldn't see my father. He was dead. Died from cirrhosis of the liver. I wrote a letter. Okay, there was a situation that happened, and I'll tell you about that in my story with a 9-step. It was a bad, bad situation, bad, and I made up for it. I really did, and I did it. It was beautiful, and I made even with the universe because that's what you want to do. And then steps 10 through 12 are daily steps 1 through 9. Okay, let me say that again. Steps 10 through 12 are daily continued. That's where we fail, if you will. If there is a fail in life, that's where people relapse. They stop the continued part. Steps 10 through 12, which I will show you through the forms on how that works, okay? So it says here, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. I was like, what? I thought when you stopped drinking, everything fell into place. No, 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 no. When the spiritual malady is overcome... Now, you got to understand, I still haven't had my spiritual awakening yet at the fourth step. My sponsor's still telling me I'm going to die. So it says when the spiritual malady is overcome, the mental and physical stuff will go away. That was such a true statement. My spiritual awakening came in step 9. Huge. I'll tell you about it. Most embarrassing moment of my life. 37,000 feet just it hit me. And I'm crying everywhere. But it was overwhelming God consciousness that I needed and wanted God at that time. Okay, so when the spiritual malady was overcome, then the mental and physical straighten out. And that is so true. The obsession went away. I have not had the obsession in almost 13 years, which is phenomenal. That was my gig. That was my hard thing, getting over that obsession, because I'd always lose out to it and drink. It says here, in dealing with resentments, we set them down on paper. Set them down on paper. Just don't sit in your bed smoking a cigarette. I'm not pissed at anybody today. I have no resentments. You know. Psst. Right? Put them down on paper. We set them down on paper. We list the peoples and institutions and principles. Just right here in the first column, as Chris was talking about. It says, to whom we were angry. We ask ourselves why we were angry. What's the cause? Column number two. Okay? We found that our self-esteem, pocketbook, ambition, personal relationships, even sex. Column number three. Okay? We were burned up. And then it talks about the sex inventory on page 69. We reviewed our conduct over the past years. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, to whom were we hurt? But back to the, back to the last column, as Chris was talking about, the inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them, we placed them down in black and white. Column four, okay? So I wrote this column for you. That's resentment. Chris will be finishing up with the rest of the four step, and I think we're going to be breaking for lunch. Come on up.
Good. An alcoholic?
Eric.
Thank you guys for a great morning. Yes. Doug and Chris. Yeah, give them a round of applause.
Thank you.